Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps. lcms.org/youthcorps.
Mary did not ride an elephant into Bethlehem that night. So you go home and you go to your church and you tell people, I'm a Democrat, I'm a God-fearing Democrat.
Feminists have to begrudgingly admit that women are better suited to babies and nurturing, but insists upon telling women to let go of their desire to care for their babies.
If you're going to say that the Lord's Supper is only a memorial meal, you'd have to say the same thing about the Passover. But it wasn't. It actually was God at work bringing his people out of bondage.
Nebraska Oregon students love issues, etc.
We are kind of immersed in this all day long, aren't we? Unless your boss at work says you can't use it, you still find a way to use it. You got your phone, don't you? Of course you do. So on your lunch hour, the first thing you do is pop it open. And what are you looking at? You're looking at Twitter. You're looking at Facebook. Maybe occasionally browsing through a YouTube video. It's light. It's entertaining. It's distracting. It's certainly amusing. How does this kind of media that is so hands-on, so in your face, so up close and personal, how does it differ from what most adults in America grew up with in terms of electronic media, radio, and television? We're going to be talking about pop culture, especially in terms of Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and the others. Pastor Jonathan Fisk will join us here for the first half hour, the second hour of Issues Etc. live this Tuesday afternoon, November the 10th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us. We do a weekly series with him called Responding to Evangelical Clichés. The cliché we'll take up today is, I don't need to go to church to be a Christian. We'll answer that one in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. You can join us for the next hour with your questions or your comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us for our biweekly series on pop culture to talk about Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting Television, and author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back.
Good afternoon.
How do these forms of media, and they're kind of melded together, how do they differ fundamentally from the electronic media that most adults in America grew up with, television, radio?
I think we should probably try taking them one at a time, but if you had to put them all together, I mean, YouTube's a little bit different, but I think the biggest difference between them and, say, radio and television is radio and television remained largely linear in the way they presented information to us. Whereas Twitter and Facebook particularly, and YouTube to a lesser degree, are nonlinear. They are random, really. You can't even really say that they're circular in the way they present information. It is, and now this, next the news, next the hilarity, constantly. To varying degrees. I mean, Twitter and Facebook, extremely so. And what's, I think, most important to see in this is not that this is good or evil, that's not really where we want to go, but that when reading was the dominant form of communication, the written word, its linearness sort of formed the way that people thought, and so they began to pursue long linear thinking, project-oriented thinking almost. And then radio and television began to speed up our processes a little bit so that we were able to move on to other ideas more quickly than, say, in a book, but didn't necessarily help us retain them. In fact, we got worse at retaining information. And now the scatteredness of this information that's being thrown at us is also going to influence us in ways that maybe we can't even see. And I don't know that I can speak on exactly what it's going to do to us. I can say this, the information comes at us so fast and so hard that we have to become very astute at quickly deciding whether it's worth knowing or not, and then dismissing that if it's not, and totally forgetting it. We can't retain everything that we see coming across our plate on our feeds. There's just too much, and it's too random and too varied. And so we have to create a metric for either absorbing the information, trying to remember it later, writing it down, I don't know, whatever, it kind of depends. You know, sending a link to yourself to a video you want to watch later. You have to decide, am I going to keep this, or am I going to get rid of it? And the vast majority of it, we get rid of. Which then makes us, as opposed to maybe a written culture, which was astute at learning and remembering, we are very, very, very good at forgetting. We're masters of it, and we have to be to survive. But then what does that do to us as a people when the kind of the dominant skill we have to develop as media consumers is forgetfulness? How does that impact our long-term ability to study and understand or to grow as a human being? And I don't know. I mean, I don't have answers to that. But I do know, I mean, this nonlinear reality, it has to impact us, and it has to impact especially kids that are raised on it. If it's all they know, if that's what they've grown up assuming reality is, you just can't look at them and expect them then to, say, go to confirmation class the same way you did when all you knew was six channels on the television. It's just a different world.
Okay, I want to come back to all of that, but let's start with the one that you're most familiar with, because your avocation kind of has led you into the form of media that is YouTube. And, you know, how would you explain it to grandma? Television on your computer, but not really television. It's got the ads if you don't pay for it. And it's entertaining like television. How would you explain it to grandmother?
Right. Well, YouTube is the closest thing to television that we have in the kind of internet media. The biggest difference, I would say, is that it's on demand, whereas TV is not. You know, Netflix moves television a little bit in that direction, but it's on demand, so I get to choose what I want to watch and what I don't want to watch, and if I'm bored, I go on to something else. Commercials tend to be hover over kind of things rather than things at the front, but sometimes they're that as well. But it does act like TV in that it needs to follow some of the same ground rules for entertainment that TV does. It does mimic television styles. In fact, television is more and more mimicking YouTube in its style in terms of news delivery and things like that. The other thing about it is that it's incredibly cheap to produce. So to be able to do something on broadcast television requires not only that you own all of the equipment and have multiple staff people creating a situation for the sound and the lighting and all this kind of stuff, but then you have to be able to pay to broadcast it. You have to either pay to put it on cable, or you got to pay to put it on the airwaves somehow, and it's very, very expensive. Whereas YouTube, anybody can have a channel, and YouTube provides this service for free. They have alternative income sources, and so on YouTube you have everything and anything that wants to be broadcast by anyone anywhere. They used to have cable access stations where your local people could go in and use the studio, and you'd kind of get this like kind of low end content. Well, YouTube has a lot of that, and it's got people that have put a lot of effort and time into it and gotten very good at things, to the point where I've seen news stories, newsrooms, where they're reporting on a YouTube video and showing the YouTube video as the news story for the night because it was so interesting or clever or funny or whatever. It had gone viral, which means a lot of people are watching it. So, you know, to grandma, it's just more TV. Whereas your cable now has several hundred stations, YouTube has an endless number of stations. And those stations do tend to revolve around a personality or a set of personalities, as opposed to being a network, a controlled environment. It's sort of just you and your camera talking to the world at whatever level you want to do. And yet at the same time, you know, a lot of music artists use them to promote their music and do videos. If you want to see a preview to a movie that just came out, YouTube will almost certainly have it up there. Highlights for sports end up showing up there. Not all of it necessarily legally. There's a whole other level of this with copyright laws and whatnot. But it is sort of TV 2.0, minus the production value and the control. I don't think it's going to replace TV, but it is sort of like pirate TV, if you can say it that way.
I'll tell you what I use it for. If I need to fix the brakes on my car,
right?
There is a guy, there are lots of guys who have the same car, who are in the same position I or have been, and who will show me step by step with their video camera how to do exactly the job that I want to do. And so it saves me a ton of money. I use it for basically do-it-yourself. I also use it to distract myself, you know, entertainment the same way I would. But my patience level with these things, I'm willing to watch a 20-minute video on a guy changing drum brakes because right. I got to learn how to do it.
Right.
But if I want to be entertained, you go past about 5 minutes and I'm sorry. The first thing I look at when I click play is how long is this video going to last?
Right.
What's going on?
Right. Yeah, well, that's just it. It's that's why it's not TV, right? In that it is living in this scattered information, what are you going to show me next, internet world. And so while on the one hand it can be more amazing than an encyclopedia, right? Because no encyclopedia can give you the information you can find on YouTube in a few clicks in terms of what you're talking about for how to do this, how to do that. On the other hand, it must, if it's going to be something other than encyclopedic knowledge, it must play by faster rules than even your average movie or television show does. I'm not sure I can explain that. And it doesn't always even follow that. So, you know, you end up running, they have a sidebar, and they got related videos, which sometimes are related and sometimes are just promoted, and who knows how they got there through their algorithms. But so you start clicking and moving through it because this looks interesting or that looks interesting. Or, you know, with music, I mean, I find a lot of new music on YouTube because I'll Google a song I want to listen to, and then there's a whole list of other stuff by artists that are similar that show up in the sidebar, or people put together playlists. I even listen to music online now. I'll create my own playlists rather than buy the album, and I just listen to the YouTube videos. What's going on there? I don't know. It's scattered. It's TV becoming scattered, and yet not entirely so, because there's also the development of real ongoing channels, and this is where Worldview Everlasting really wants to go, that are promoting multiple shows within a networked environment on one YouTube station, one YouTube channel. And a good example of this is a group called Geek and Sundry, which is all based around and developed around the gaming community, whether it be video games or tabletop games. I stumbled across one thing they had a couple weeks ago I thought was fascinating. They had, and we'll have to cover this subtopic another time, but they had Dungeons and Dragons event going on where they were videoing these famous people playing, and they were each trying to act in character. They had a few little props as sort of a joke, and then the game master was telling the story in this like bravado voices. It was drama. And I was captured. I watched 30 minutes of it, and you know, because I couldn't believe how good it was. And fascinating. And then so that they would even be able to do this on the same channel where you can get one of the girls who started the channel, Felicia Day, has a show where her and her brother play old, really bad Nintendo games and make fun of them while they do it. And I only lasted about 8 minutes of that before I went on. But again, this is the value. So you got a channel with lots of content that you can then just flip through and find what you're actually interested in watching, as opposed to being held captive by what the network has decided you're going to watch, which is kind of the old television medium. And in the one sense, it's very freeing, and in another sense, it's very scattering, and it doesn't help us learn to think or endure. It's kind of just at the whim of our passions. And with that note, I mean, I think maybe moving into Facebook and Twitter, that's where this stuff really gets scattered, I guess is the word.
We'll take that up on the other side of the break. It's what I call the scrolling media, because that really, whether you realize it or not, is what keeps everything moving. It just keeps piling on one thing on top of another. You have to scroll down to find something that was there, just there, a couple minutes ago, and sometimes you really have to scroll a ways. It does not really encourage the exercise of any kind of attention span, but that's probably more of a reflection of us than it is of the media itself. We'll talk about that with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. It is our series with him on pop culture. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Casting Christ's net on the internet. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about pop culture in a regular bi-weekly series with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. And today we're talking about Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. We're turning to the scrolling media here in just a second. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting Television, author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Okay, Jonathan, let's turn to what I call the scrolling media, because that's their primary To me, it's the engine that runs the whole thing. If they weren't scrolling, that is one thing piling on top of another, pushing everything down below it, it would completely change the experience. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking about before being that we've become very good at discarding information that we don't desire because there's so much just being pumped at us. The flip side of that is that we're voracious. We just want more information. And we want to suck it up and pump it out as fast as we can. And so when Facebook and Twitter kind of following on its heels slightly after, kind of just discovered this way of rolling through everything that anybody you know is thinking as just a random shot from every corner of the planet, it was genius in one way. And I definitely want to talk about, you know, Facebook has tremendous value in terms of its connecting power, but it's also kind of a sickening thing at the same time, this piling of random scattered information upon itself where you can just sit there and you start rolling, looking for something to look at, and maybe every couple of minutes you find something. I find more and more, I just don't even know. I'm just wasting my time, you know, sucking it up, and I finally have to shake my head. Like, what am I doing? I'm gonna go do something and get away from it. And yet, at the same time, you know, what was it, 2 days ago, there's a new Star Wars trailer came out. I wouldn't have found it if I hadn't been scrolling through Facebook. And I was so excited when I found it. It was really cool. I'm excited about the movie. Glad I knew that it was there the day it came out. So it's a news source, right? And yet, you also have issues where, you know, the news you're getting is a little bit biased because you only are connected with your friends. What you click on, Facebook has a way of sort of finding out the topic or the style or the person you clicked on and re-addressing all of what it presents to you to be more of that kind of thing. So just as an example, if you're clicking on Fox News stuff, you're going to see a lot of Fox News stuff showing up in your plate. You won't see any NPR stuff showing up in your feed. It's a news source, but it's a very narrow one, and again, very random one. Some of it, I guess, depends on how big your personal network is, too, but I think most people just keep expanding theirs. Everybody you ever knew or met, somehow you run into them on Facebook, and you end up friends with people you don't even know.
Now, one of the things that intrigues me about Twitter is it's really more of kind of its history. I think I've spent about the last year reading every book I could find on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Google, everything I could find. And it's a small detail, but it seems to me to be, can kind of explain what's going on, maybe a fundamental difference between Facebook and Twitter. When they were first starting out, there was a vying for power among the founders of Twitter. But one of the big arguments that they had, in addition to kind of financial arguments and thing, was what question do you ask of the user in order to elicit a response? And there was actually a debate between the two major founders of the technology and of the platform. One of them wanted to ask a question to the effect of, what are you doing or what are you thinking? Mm-hmm. And the other one wanted to ask, what's happening? Two basically different questions. And the second one won out, which is why Twitter now becomes such an amazing source of news for people, because
right.
they're not
right.
just talking about how they're feeling, they're talking about what's going on around them, too. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had never given much attention to that. And I'm looking at the Facebook question, what's on your mind, being a very different question. I feel like Facebook has changed their question a few times. But certainly, in its embryo, the kind of question they were asking had to form what people actually put on there. I think, if I recall, they were very intentional about it being the abbreviated news as well, or the abbreviated idea, whatever, I forget how many, is it 64, 140 characters that you get, very intentionally not letting you just put as much as you want and sit there and opine and argue and debate and prolix, but instead, the whole format was like, you have to figure out how to briefly say what is going on right now, and you can't do much more than that. And if you're thinking about like what a reporter wants to do if they're on site, that's exactly it. They want to give play-by-play. You know, here's a sentence at a time. Here, just saw this happen, just saw this happen, just saw this happen. As opposed to trying to have, say, for example, theological debate. Every once in a while, you know, I've been posting, tweeting lines out of Broken for a couple months now, and every once in a while, I'll get a tweet back where someone's asking me to debate. And, like, they're trying to start an argument with me on Twitter about what I said. And as much as I would like to or not like to have the conversation, I never engage. Because you just can't. You can't possibly explain yourself in 140 characters. And the medium isn't meant for that. It's not meant for debate and argument. It's meant to share a very brief quip of what's going on. As I scroll through my mind right now, I'm just looking at it. I still see a lot of links as well. So it's like, look at this thing, look at that thing. Various media sources point you to their most recent thing that they've made. And I think like some of the sports teams that I follow as well, they're always just pointing back to the latest kind of controlled information they want to get out. I don't know. I know Molly, you know, honestly, you should probably have Molly Hemingway on to talk about Twitter because she uses it a lot more than I do. I don't. For me, it's not been a very valuable resource other than to push stuff out that I'm already pushing out of other outlets. I have a good friend who got mad at me. I don't follow enough people, apparently. He considered it rude of me to only have so many things I followed when I was had a lot of followers, and but that's my lack of understanding of the medium itself. It's one that I've had trouble engaging, as opposed to say Facebook, where I spend a lot of time and use it to stay in touch with people. A lot of the work we do for Wave Everlasting happens within Facebook, not on the main pages that we're showing to people, but our conversation with each other, where we can have group conversation running and always be able to go back and track back and see what was there a couple of days ago. It's easier to do that than email, I suppose. They're fascinating. They're so diverse, right? I mean, and even what we've talked about here, we've barely scratched the surface of the other edges of these tools, from groups that you can find on Facebook, to I just got put into my 20th class reunion has a thing where they're trying to get everybody together on that. So people I hadn't thought about in years on there. And Twitter, a little less diverse, but just as much scrolling, right? I mean, you can just, depending on how many people follow, you can just go on and on and on and on. And it's everything from the most boring, inane comment about, you know, I just ate a cookie, to some really profound idea, a Luther quote or whatever, to, you know, a gif of a shot from a sports event last night, you know, 5 seconds just scrolling through it or rolling through the image over and over again.
One last thought here from you, if you would, and that is, the original intent of almost all of this is to, in some way, connect people in a way that they couldn't connect before. And that has been a huge success and also a huge failure, depending on how you want to look at it, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or even YouTube. It has connected people. It has connected them in a certain way, though. How mm-hmm. would you describe it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd step back and say that's a really, really important and valid point. That the idea that this stuff has made us not connect to each other is false. You know, that somehow you're mad because someone's sitting there looking at their phone. I just saw this in a meme that my producer Peter posted. Someone's staring at their phone and you're mad that they're not talking to you. Well, you know, 100 years ago they were staring at a newspaper. It's not like it's that different in the sense that it is conveying information. And yet it's doing it at a faster and more distracting level or way. And maybe I just got off topic from your question, but I would say that on the one hand, these mediums are very good at being certain kind of tools. So as we said a moment ago, Twitter is fantastic at live coverage of news events. If you got a reporter who you trust and they're out somewhere, you can really know what's going on the ground in an amazing way that you really couldn't convey with television. And Facebook is phenomenal at finding old friends and reconnecting and staying connected to them. And YouTube is really neat at being able to produce television for a smidgen of the cost, or to send out a video message to people very, very quickly and easily. And yet, as good as these tools are at certain things, they're not as good at other things. You can't do with Twitter or Facebook or YouTube what you can do with a book. You can't do with them what you can do with radio. You can link to radio. You can put the radio on it, right? But radio is its own thing, its own form and medium. And so it's not so much either or us against them, as my advocacy is always we've got to learn what these tools are good for and then try to be good at using them for that and avoid misusing the tools or using them in a poor way. And then also ask questions about how they do affect how we think, how they're forming how our children think, and trying to understand media ecology and teach our children to be survivors of media ecology, that they don't just spend 3 hours scrolling any more than they just spend 3 hours playing a video game, but they learn to use these mediums in the ways that are beneficial to their neighbor.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota. He's creative director of Worldview Everlasting Television, author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often as Possible. Jonathan, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Folks, you still have a few hours left to join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club and receive our limited edition Here I Stand long sleeve t-shirt, in addition to the other membership premiums that you'll get. The I Have Issues t-shirt, books, broadcast transcripts, and advertising for your confessional Lutheran congregation. Find out more about this special offer for our new Reformation Club members by clicking the picture of the Here I Stand limited edition t-shirt at issuesetc.org, or call Craig at 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. When we come back, we will continue our series responding to evangelical cliches. Today, the cliche is, you don't have to go to church to be a Christian, or going to church doesn't make you a Christian. Choose your poison. We'll deal with those variations when we come back. Standing firm in a hostile world is the theme of the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th, This Confessional Lutheran Conference features Issues Etc. guest Adam Francisco, David J. Weber, Joe Abrahamson, attorney Mark Stern, and Professor Alan Quist. If you are in Texas or would like some warmer weather in February, check out the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th at faithlutheransa.org, faithlutheransa.org.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November 4th through 10th, and join us for a live broadcast from CPH on Thursday afternoon, November the 5th. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale online and in store, cph.org, and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale, November 4th through 10th.
The Lord has gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. These gifts can be received every week at both Grace Lutheran Church and Trinity Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Join us for divine services at Grace on Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., as well as every Wednesday at 11 a.m., or at Trinity every Sunday at 11 a.m. Grace is located at 3310 East Pawnee and Trinity at 611 South Erie. Gather with us around our Lord and His giving His gifts to us. See you soon.
Expert guests, expansive topics, extolling Christ. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc., and you.